This is Jan Cox, talk number 1379, recorded on December 26th, 1994.
At the routine level, man's consciousness and thinking are one and the same. Those who seek to surpass this position become conscious observers of their thinking. And those who make it beyond this point reach, again, achieve a merging of thought and consciousness, but with a certain new and unexpected twist. In the mystic's vocabulary, the opposite of separate is super separate. The initial reports say that the explosion over at the psychologist convention was caused by a paper that was attempted to be read entitled, "Yes, There Are Causes That Have Made Us What We Are, Being Born." The pursuit of physical pleasure is to nourish the body, not the mind. But since everything overlaps, it's easy to confuse the two, even amongst those with metagnostic interests. The improvement of oneself physically seems much more direct and doable than does its mental counterpart. With most people, enough said, and their common practices prove the point. But with the mystically driven, as always, things are both not quite so simple and simpler times three. Spotting for him as he did his bench presses, Plotinus' girlfriend took note of the satisfaction in physical exercise, in that you can visibly see the increase in muscularity through appropriate effort, whilst the rewards of those moving metal in their inner gym are known only to themselves. And he grunted his agreement as he finished off his reps. Life continues to allow the less alert the privilege to be pissed. One day a lad wondered, "Can man live by one-liners alone?" And immediately responded, "The truth is simple, and if it ain't simple, it ain't the truth." And went on his way. It's all in the telling, maybe. Quite often, incompetence presented with squeals. People who can't think good got little interest in standing around watching those who can do so. Having a cerebral cortex, Adam and Eve were conscious. Becoming verbal, they altered their consciousness. Sunning themselves on the frontal deck, they waved away the steward, saying, "No drugs for us, we're natural stimuli receptors." Yeah. As she stoked his furnaces and trimmed his sails, Odias's girlfriend mused on the fact of how, if you listen to each wave as it strikes the boat, it sounds as though each wave strikes the boat. Being presently unable to replace the horses on his merry-go-round with Pegasus, this one chap began, in the meantime, greasing his. No. One guy had a motto: anything worth thinking about is worth thinking about once. As the train approached the Swiss border, the conductor with the non-scheduled look in his eye reminded passengers that the rearranging of the books in their compartment can give the illusion of going somewhere. To simple minds, the hero is simply the man of action. To mystics, it is he whose actions are freed from the mind. And all of those who lived and died in the routine fashion, and will do so in the future, began to stamp their rotting feet and chant, "We don't get it, we don't get it, you knew damn well that we wouldn't get it." Conspiracies. All of the really great conspiracies are right out in the open. Doubt it? Just take a good look at life. The occult reculted. There is but one great mystery, and that is, how can men be so dense? No offense. As his own personal theme, one man adopted that ever-popular ditty, I'm Sitting on Top of the World. Then, after a surprising improvement in his eyesight, on alternate days began substituting the world sitting on top of moi. While answering the phone during his absence, Muhammad's girlfriend told one caller, "No, he's not here right now. He's out working his other worldly wiles on some unsuspecting molehill." One guy said, "If what goes around does come around, then I want to be out of town." The priest told the king, "I have a statue that cries." And his grace asked, "Can it die?" "No." "Can it plead forgiveness?" "No." "Can it give money?" "No." "Then what do you want with it?" In the world of man, the point of things is not the point of things. From the view of the more conscious, those who do not take themselves beyond their natural state are unnatural. The way it goes, well, the way it wants to go. The body says, "Why take a chance?" And the mind follows suit. As you aged, if you could keep from getting older, even the ordinary could become a bit more knowledgeable. Everyone has a twin brother or sister who likes and dislikes the same things as you do. What do you think of that? One man looked careful at his consciousness and thought, "Even a perfect copy is still a copy." And his mind said, "Does this mean we're through?" The title of the ultimate movie bio of our species on this planet, Humanity. The beast with 6 billion bodies and 2 brains. "Well, yeah," added one guy, "but that's still enough for me." And the sad truth is, he's right. To help keep men dazed and in line, life presents its most doubtful endeavors as fait accomplis. P.S., the most blatant example of this is man being made to believe that the mind knows all that need be known. P.P.S., on a more specific local level, this is all personified by such activities as weight loss programs, the diamond business, and mandatory education, who all privately refer to this dynamics as the non-stoppedness of necessary foolishness. Music, 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 or it seems to me that I have heard that song before. Making no effort of their own to compose, with no shame, the simple, same cliches. And now, another identifying description from our unnaturalist field guide. The more conscious are the types of people who live next door to no one. Once the birds took control of the backyard, they right off put a halt to the slopping of the cats. Talk is the mirror by which the mind sees. Second stanza. Talk is the mirror by which the mind sees, and the consciousness naturally given to man believes that the mind is its eyes. The transcendental head explosion could be described as non-indigenous eyesight that is unfixed and, as per verbal specificity, is also unfocused. So, who then, I ask you, would want the mind of a mystic but a mystic? As she was proofing some of his manuscripts, Hammurabi's girlfriend reflected on the fact that justice comes in at least 2 flavors. The physically executed variety, visible to all and aimed at controlling behavior, and the internal version, normally unnoticed other than unknowingly used as a basis for unsophisticated criticism and carping. The challenge, human problems. the approach, the human mind, the full story. It won't work, but you got to try. In one sense, mute consciousness and verbal thought interfere with one another sufficiently to preclude realization of maximum neural efficiency. The awakening is the destruction of this condition. As he would stroll along the back roads, oft-times the pelican could be heard singing, "Ah, sweet mystery of life, at last we're welded." All criticism is shilling. For a mystic, a three-card money game played on himself. As he hung slowly from a tree in Odin's cold orchard, a warrior cheerfully moaned, "I regret that I have but one back to no longer bite." Those who significance and irony find reveal to human speech their scant acquaintance. Ordinary people will act busy in the attempt to prove that they're somebody. A mystic, if he wanted to do something similar, would show it by his doing nothing. More evidence, if needed, that men do not actually want to know what's going on is the fact that they continue to love the idea of a mystery rather than the answer thereto. Thus does awakening to a higher state of consciousness remain of so little interest. Weird, huh? Explanatory, what? Carry on, eh? Final definitions time. First from our health watch. The mind. The only ill without a cure that's not an ill. And lastly, talk. The mother of all attempts to alter consciousness. Oh yeah, one more item. Life once said as a kind of good-natured rib to one of the planet's more awakened men that you can't make what you've done popular. Life, what a kidder. Ask you to consider again that the idea, the subject of altered, changed states of consciousness is not a subject whatsoever unknown to ordinary man. In fact, very validly, it can be said that as soon as man was conscious, about the first thing he tried to do, that he wanted to do, was to change the state of consciousness. Men ordinarily attempt to change state of consciousness continually. It is not called that. And I would submit to you those who would try to escape the gravity of ordinary consciousness have got to realize what's going on, and we'll talk about other people for a second. But watching other people and even seeing in other people, yes, that's true, will not, as we used to say on the Zen forum, do you a bit of good because you do it. But let's consider the great smorgasbord from which men draw daily in the attempt to change consciousness. They do it by, where shall we start? Oh, I don't know. They do it by reading, watching TV and movies, listening to music, listening to talk. Obviously with drugs, alcohol. They do it with exercise. They do it with caffeine, nicotine, spices, fasting, religious rituals. This is one of the areas that we might consider right off the bat as either so blatant, so obvious, and so simple that you may miss it, or else you think that it's much more convoluted and complex than it is, and still manage to miss it. consider, just speaking, making up an exemplary, fictional person. He awakens in the morning. Or you could look at it as though Adam and Eve awakens, and they're not yet from the garden. You awaken in the morning, and let's just call it a state of consciousness. Just, that's it. Some sort of minimal state of consciousness. I should have added all the routine things, by the way, sleep. In case you'd never thought about it. Right in there with spices and caffeine and talk. But let's just consider, we don't have to define it, but just the minimal state, let's even consider it's almost bereft of any characteristics. You just awaken in the morning, literally or figuratively. Humanity awakens in the morning. So you just awaken, at least for a split second, you're just conscious. Not particularly conscious of anything, it may only be a split second, but let's just say that man is capable of a minimal, almost non-specific, at least without any characteristics for us to speak of, consciousness. That's just it. The state, X state. Ground zero. Do you realize that throughout the day, throughout men's lives, you are continually attempting to change that? Every time you read, and don't even worry, don't ask, well, read what? Anything. And you can say, as ordinary mind would want to, that there is a difference between reading schlock, reading pulp fiction, and reading philosophy. But every reading is a change in consciousness. You can say it about all of the arts. You can say it about all the entertainment. I've already said about watching TV and movies, and an ordinary mind could say that perhaps there is some validity to that, as according to whether you watch this regular old commercial, cheap, trice TV, or whether you watch PBS, whether you watch educational shows. That's not what we're talking about. You are changing the zero state, the minimal, the noncommittal state of consciousness. Men cannot, in fact, I know I haven't described much, but if I had ordinary people here, but I'm assuming that most of you have some concept of what I'm referring to, it's not even normally spoken of because, in a sense, it no longer exists. That's why I made up the stories or the thing about Adam and Eve being conscious. But then as soon as they became verbal, they altered consciousness. And right now, we're not talking about altered in either a positive or negative way. We're not making an editorial comment. When I say X level of consciousness, minimal, there is no such description. Because if you were at that level, you could not talk, and so I couldn't describe it anyway. It exists, and yet it's beyond description because it is prior to man being able to talk, at least a split second, before you talk, before humanity talked. But there is such a level. There is such a level, and people know it. From one sense, at the other end of a spiral, you might say, is a more awakened state, but we'll get to that in a minute. There is, operationally, a state of consciousness that is minimal and bereft of any particular characteristic. Would be consciousness without thought. It does not exist, but it's there, the possibility. It was there at one time. So just press on for a second. That you wake up every morning, humanity wakes up every morning, and at that first split second, you are in that state of minimal, non-committed, unfocused, non-specific consciousness. Not to fall into the vernacular, and you can't stand it. Using you, I agree, quite parochially. It's life making you do it, but men cannot stand it. And if someone had carried along an ordinary mind this far and thought it heard what I'd said, they could say, well, that's not true. Then I could say, being the sly devil that I sometimes am, they could say, it's not that I couldn't stand such a state. That's not true. And I could say, well, then, why do you do something to change it? Ha-ha, see? You understand? And people will go on some sort of binge and decide, well, I will not watch TV. It's too trashy. Or I'm going to quit reading the National Enquirer. And taken to a bit further extreme is people who believe that they are involved with some attempt beyond that to simply clear the mind or whatever imagined reason of intellectual morality they have for giving up the Star, another great source of information. There's people who believe that they're indeed involved in some sort of metaphysical quest and will, at a real extreme, go into a monastery. I will take up, in fact, meditation, if nothing else, on their own to several hours a week or a day to sit down alone in a room with no outside interference, no noises, no radio, turn out the lights, and meditate or pray. All of that represent crude, simplistic attempts to go back to that zero-level state of consciousness, the very one that they wake up each morning and for a split second are in that state and can't stand it. I repeat again, I wish you'd try to look at least as many ways as I can describe it in the next 20 or 30 minutes, just directly at it, because it's not all that mysterious, it's not all that hidden. It's just one of those things, it's like you've been living in an apartment with this gigantic, remember, dragon. And somebody mentioned how much they like the green paint on your walls. And you think, well, I never noticed. That is, dragons notoriously being green in color, see. It is just right there. But now imagine even that you are up out of bed. You're home from work. Come in, you sit down. And it's almost as though it's that second again that nothing's going on, or it may seem like 20 or 30 seconds. And you sit there in the chair. I'm just making it up as I go along, kind of this unwind thing. You sit there, what a delight to be away from the office and all the stress, and you sit there. And almost you could doze off, and not quite, it's only 5 in the afternoon, but it's almost that consciousness, all this mishmash that was going on just previously, you pulling into the house, all the traffic and all the noise, and you get a... And within what, a minute, you'll reach for the remote and turn on TV. Mm-hmm. And you can even say, if you were asked, I'm just going to relax more. You are specifically, without knowing it, changing your state of consciousness. Turn on the radio and don't tell me, well, I only listen to classical music. I only listen to rock and roll. I only listen to the news. Doesn't matter. You are affecting, you are changing your state of consciousness. There have been times within most of you people's lifetime, I think it was known as the 60s, that had one of the catchphrases of being the druggy generation or a druggy decade. And the term altered state of consciousness had become so common it was in songs and titles of books. And of course, nothing new, but the term itself, altered state of consciousness. And any of you who are listening, even the last 30 minutes, played around back and forth from altered to changed, and they are synonymous, but the word and the whole term took on a connotation back then, and it was tied directly to drugs, and specifically the psychedelic family of drugs, LSD and the mushrooms, and peyote. But consider also, and they thought there were many of them after the fact, or when they would write about it, would say that they were indeed, the experience was in some way spiritually, personally enlightening. That was not simply a routine drug trip. It wasn't the same thing as simply getting drunk or even just getting high off pot, that it actually affected the senses, the intellect, consciousness in such a way that many, many people would say that it was just life-changing, that they saw things they never saw, thought things they never thought, etc. But there is a certain continuing, shall we say, doubtfulness to this endeavor, which is its unreliability. It is a form of, you could say, emotional Russian roulette. Common example for any of you who have not taken psychedelic drugs, I assume everybody's had enough alcohol before on one or more occasions that you were drunk, just to use, again, the vernacular. And people can get drunk the first two or three times under the influence of alcohol and say, well, I like this. It's very common for people the first time they drink to go, ooh, and they're just so happy and bop around the room if they were friends and just get giggly and go up to people that they normally do not approach and put their arm around them and say, you know, boy, I always wanted to tell you how much I like you. And they just think, you know, I'm just a jolly good fellow and I didn't know what great spirit and goodwill I had in me. Quite common, but it's also quite common if they got, well, we'll talk still about other parties, for people to drink, and who knows when, one out of every six times, eight times, or some, if you got an automatic, you know, 9 millimeter, you know, maybe out of 12 times, you get a few drinks in you, and suddenly, you're about ready to kick ass. Just turn on strangers and just, you just suddenly get insulting, very aggressive. And of course, it doesn't do once you're in the influence. Say, boy, you pissed tonight. What do you mean? Who are you talking to? You know, that sort of thing. When you get into drugs and alcohol, obviously, of course, being one, you are playing a kind of emotional game of chance. Now, that would seem obvious enough. But now, let's back up a little from people who even they would take it that to be an extreme example because, of course, there are people who do not even drink. But consider everything else in life that you do. How about someone who, a teetotaler for all we care, never had a drug in their life? How about even a Mormon? I understand they won't even drink Cokes because they have some caffeine. They don't understand why. By the way, somebody was asking, brought up all the strange beliefs in all religions and things that are so easy to laugh at. Well, several that I've pulled out recently, example like, you know, virgin birth, which is, in case you don't know, is by no means limited to Christianity. The stories are much older than that, and they're everywhere. But it sure is easy if you're outside that religion to think, oh, come on, folks. You know, a little religion, a little fun, a social place to go is all right, but you people actually believe that a woman just suddenly got pregnant and went, boo, you know, I'm pregnant, and, you know, come on, give me a break. If you look behind anything, and such as that one, obviously, or should be to you people who exercise some blunt insight nowadays, that behind all such as that was not that everybody was born of a woman. You know, Buddha, Jesus, me and you and everybody. And what it represented was a non-physical, a rebirth at another level that was possible. But you can take that, or you can take the most silly, the most asinine, the most illogical ritual, belief, dogma in any major religion, probably any minor one, but it might take you, you might have to dig a bit more. And behind it, you can just look. You don't have to go study it. Once you learn to think in a certain way, you can realize what the reality, what the real potentially useful message was behind this before ordinary, simple people got hold of it. And they took all they wanted. It's just another fairy tale. It's just another intellectual, innocuous hobby. But back to people who are not even, that they could believe that they are just trying to be religious and realize, well, they don't even realize, as I said, they're people, but they're religious groups that will not even drink coffee and Coca-Cola because it has caffeine. And I assume that somewhere along the way, just if we're going to assume it had some operational origin, that a minister, a prophet, somebody in the church, prophet's sister-in-law one time stayed up all night drinking coffee and got such a case, as they used to call it in New Orleans psychiatric circles, such a case of the heebie-jeebies, and drove everybody crazy, and she got like this, which, again, I don't know whether you know it, but you get coffee or even tea in enough concentrated in enough of a concentrated condition, then you can get high. You can scare yourself if you want a cheap, legal high. You can think it's not a psychedelic high like your brain went somewhere, but you can get enough coffee or tea in a concentrated form in your body, and you'll think your heart's about to go somewhere. Like, be still my beating heart, but you're not reacting to some erotic, some sensual attraction. It's just like, good God, I'm about to die. Which is an altered state of consciousness, by the way. I don't mean just dying, the fear that you're going to. But at any rate, we'd just assume that they found out that this can get you in an agitated, just a non-Christian or non-Mormon, non-Jewish, whatever it was, state. That's not good because you're out of control. And all religions say, not that they practice it, but that is part of it, is that the religion is about control, but it's, of course, about control of behavior. But back to it. Everybody is involved constantly with doing something to change behavior, but it is absolutely unpredictable. Now, with ordinary people, it's neither here nor there, unless they overdo it. And if they overdo it, you can take it to an extreme. It's like ODing on a drug. It can kill you. But ordinarily speaking, that is, an ordinary person that once a week or every day, an ordinary person stops at a bar after work for cocktail hour, and that two or three times a week, they may say, or five times a week, they may, if you ask them when they walked out after a couple of martinis, they go, well, I kind of like it. I like the friendship and the people from the office, and it just kind of relaxes me. And then maybe once a week, twice a month, whatever, just for no reason, they walk in, they get their first drink, or before they just barely get it in them, and suddenly, for no reason, they're in an aggressive situation with perhaps a erstwhile friend or an otherwise friend. You understand that, and they go, well, I don't know. But it is not the end of the world. But it is absolutely unpredictable. It is unpredictable for you to go to a movie. No matter what you've heard about, no matter who's in it, no matter that it says based upon one of the famous plays of Molière, and you go, well, hey, every time I read him, it's almost a mystical experience. Yeah, well, time Hollywood gets through it, you don't know. You don't even know whether you can pick up the same book and say, well, reading the writings of Buddha, reading the Old Testament, always cheers me up, puts me in a good mood. No, it doesn't. Not always. You understand it? And with ordinary people, it doesn't really matter. It's just irrelevant, except what I want you to consider, they are doing it constantly. They're not aware of it. If they were not trying to change consciousness, they would stay in that state that they momentarily have, so to speak, as soon as we all awaken each morning. Mm-hmm. That you've got almost that point. It's sort of like between, go back to, since most of you people seem to be Old Testament the way you look, there's dead or something. Well, different. To use that kind of illusion again, it's like the moment between God looking down, Jehovah looking down in the garden, Adam and Eve, they're conscious, but they haven't yet spoken. And it's this like a split second, and a split second, as you know, what now can be just any time you want. Mm-hmm. But it's that split second that that Jehovah looked down, and he looked over at what he told him not to do, where it was, you know, don't piss on this, don't eat that food. He looked down there, saw some skins laying there on the ground, and then looked at them. I mean, they're the only people there. And he looked at them, and it's like this split second before he went, huh? You know what? You understand? That was the moment that they then had their consciousness altered because they became verbal. But it's like this split second that you have continually, or at least once a day, we'll say. And of course, once a day can be any time you want, remember. But it is that people are not at all comfortable, to say the least, with that condition. It's not because of stupidity and et cetera. It's because of the way things are wired up. A person cannot stay in that state ordinarily. If a person did ordinarily stay in that state, they would no longer be an ordinary person. They would be deranged. It is so deranged, as a matter of fact, those of you that keep up with the psychiatric literature, you might notice it is so deranged. Now, I'm fixing to tell you something that's really deranged. It is so deranged, or first I'm going to describe how deranged it is, which is frightening. It is so deranged that psychiatrists have never even thought of it. Now, that's frightening. And here it is. offices and the canons of the great psychiatric histories is filled with cases of people, and even today, and some of you may be subject to this, crying out, "My mind is driving me crazy. I can't stop it." Not one case, not one, of a man going into a psychiatrist's office and saying, "You've got to help me. I'm going crazy. My mind is just blank." They've never even imagined it. Think about it. How come somebody hadn't imagined it? See, because it is such an unnatural. See, the rest of this stuff about, "Well, I wash my hands 4,000 times a day," that's not unnatural. I mean, it's weird. I wouldn't want to be right a passenger in a car with a guy that's driving like that and all that, but that's not unnatural. Or a man says, "I hate people that look different from me." Well, that's not unnatural. "I hate people that are bigger than me." That's not unnatural. "Hell, I hate everybody." That's not unnatural. But I'll give you unnatural. What I was trying to tell you is so unnatural that nobody's ever thought about it, including psychiatrists, which I repeat is frightening. As no one has ever said, "My mind is driving me crazy. It's blank." That's unnatural. In other words, it does not happen naturally. That's why it is super unnatural. I got to try again. This doesn't exist, so it's hard to talk about. But there is a state at which man was, and you can still feel it, although it's not operational, that man was for a moment, conscious with no specific aspects to it. Just conscious. And you cannot tolerate it, using you colloquially again, but a person in that split second, and it happens continually throughout people's lives, but it is so fast, it is irrelevant, it is so fast they do not even notice it to speak of, but they are aware of it, the proof being their actions. Back to people just sit down and just almost got nothing to do, and I sit down for a second. I say nothing to do. They look at it in the sense of behavior, activity, physical. They sit, but it's internal, it gets them. Because the body doesn't mind. If you can make the comparison between the mind being at sort of non-focused, non-active consciousness, just conscious, but nothing else going on. And I said, the mind can't stand it. It can't. The body can stand a comparable thing. You all know that. Unless you're really weird, and enjoy getting up, moving around, and exercising, and working. Any decent, God-fearing, right-thinking person's body, you lay it down, and then try to think, well, shame on you. Wouldn't you like to get up and do something? And any decent, sane person's body is going to go, are you kidding? Wouldn't even bother to answer, as you notice. So it can stand, to say the least, being non-agitated. The mind cannot. And although there is no such condition in the dictionary, in the psychiatric literature, in common verbal parlance to describe a state of being conscious, but conscious of nothing. I mean, the sentence makes sense, but if you tell people that, they go, well, is that some kind of psychiatric condition? Is that some kind of psychotic state? Is that something that happens maybe with people on strange drugs? And you go, well, no. It's just that it's possible in you and everyone else that's sane, a state of consciousness or just consciousness, and it's just sort of like, all right, imagine your body, you're still healthy, yeah? And imagine you just kind of sit down and you just collapse and just lay there. You're not fidgeting, you're not doing anything, you just lay there, like, maybe after a good screw, after a good workout, you just lay there. And people go, okay. And go, all right, in the mind, think about the same thing. And they can't really. And so they can, since they can't think about it, they were within their rights to deny its existence. They can say, well, there's no such comparable mental state. And there is. I was trying to get you again. We have to sort of do an outline of it. Since you cannot directly describe it to ordinary mind, it's to outline what it's not, or to outline the operational reaction there too, even though people say they can't see it, they react to it. The proof being that people will not sit still here. The proof being that a person will sit there and momentarily just almost be blank and reach for the paper to see what's on with the movie. Jump up and decide, well, I'll have some coffee. I'm getting tired. I'll have a drink. I'll have, pour myself a little shot here. Or I'll turn on TV. I'll go to a movie. You are constantly, using you collectively, man is constantly changing his state of consciousness, altering it. The reason I did not use it continually is back in the 60s and still with a certain segment of the population, the idea of drugs and even would-be New Age rituals and disciplines of martial arts tied to some sort of chanting or meditating tied with some sort of chanting or fasting tied with meditating and chanting and then not fasting. All sorts of things, people still use the term an altered state of consciousness. And if you ask them specifically, they will immediately, if you say, well, does that have a qualitative element to it? And they go, oh, yeah. Because they certainly don't mean, well, we're doing this to lower our consciousness. No, no, no. I eat the mushrooms in hopes to expand my consciousness. No, I don't do it to lower it. Certainly not. But, as I was pointing out to you, it is absolutely a game of Russian roulette. No matter what they say, and so I was staying away from the term, because they use altered connotatively in a positive sense, that I am attempting to expand my consciousness, to improve it, to up it, to open it up to other ideas. To begin with, it does not. And as far as it even doing no damage is problematic. That is, you may get drunk today and say, well, I feel sort of happier. I can get along. In fact, I get a few drinks and I can put up with my husband or wife or my bad job. But then once a month, you get a drink around the boss and you suddenly turn on him and it's all you and your wife and everybody around you when they see that look in your eye to keep you from turning around to him and say, you know, you fat son of a bitch, I've been wanting to tell you something. It's that sort of thing. You have changed consciousness, but there is no predicting. It is going nowhere that can be focused. It is going nowhere that is reliably predictable. There is but one exemption to this. There is but one form of changing consciousness that is known, that is an improvement, and the efforts leading to it are describable. And that is simply a state of more awakened consciousness, this sort of activity, whatever it's called. That is the only form of changing consciousness that has any potential. Well, the potential's there. I'm not trying to condition it to death. It's whether a person actually ever experiences it or not. But the state itself is predictable. It's like whether you'll ever get there or not. But it is predictable. It is known. It is not a game of Russian roulette that does not one time give good results, one time not so good results. It does not one time take you to Shangri-La and the next time to Cleveland or Akron. It is the same. Consider amongst all of the... By the way, I started to spend like 50 minutes the whole time talking about life and everything that you do constantly, and it's an attempt to change consciousness. Everything you do, everything an ordinary man does in life, and you know we're talking beyond the biosurvival level, everything you do beyond just eating to survive, when it gets into areas of dining as opposed to eating, when it gets into the areas of erotic peccadilloes instead of just sex for procreation. When it gets into exercise as opposed to having to work for a living at a physical job, the difference in lifting weights, regardless of what Plotinus and his girlfriend may have been up to in that news item, but the lifting of weights, the working out in the gym, is not the same as being a ditch digger for a living. At any rate, and it's not either good or bad, except in all the latter instances, I was saying that anything above the biosurvival level, then everything else a person is doing to arbitrarily separate them absolutely for the time, for the momentarily, everything a man is doing outside of that, beyond that, is an attempt to change consciousness. If it was not, then after you were fed, after you were screwed, after you were rested, and after you were through whatever you had to do to make a living, farming, digging ditches, and you come in and you would sit down, you would be the poster boy for meditation. You would be the poster boy or girl for absolute peace of mind. You would be the exemplary living statue that every religious person, if they had any intelligence and insight, would flock to you and point. They wouldn't need to be looking to see the face of the Virgin Mary in the clouds or the outline of Moses on a grain silo in India. People would come, and there you would be, and not even knowing what the hell was going on, and suddenly you're a front yard, you minding your own business, sitting right there in Cheyenne, and you look outside, and the yard's full of all these tourists, people from all over the world, just staring, and all you're doing is you got through with everything you had to do to stay alive at that instant, and you simply sit down, or maybe laid down, who in the hell knows what. I could refer those of you that like such ideas to ponder is all these great statues of Buddha. The sitting's pretty good, but I assume a lot of you know there's some humongous, and some people find interesting ones of him throughout parts around the subcontinent, stretched out, you know, on his side, on his elbow, and kind of, he doesn't like a man asleep. He's not slobbering on himself. I mean, you look at it, and you wouldn't really bet he's asleep, but he's just kind of laying there in a slight smile on his little bill. I would suggest that if there was such a person that could do all that needs to be done at the biosurvival level, that's below the level of consciousness, the absolute physical level, and he got through, he would sit down, and here he would just go into blank. People do not, and you know that I am not saying that that would be beneficial, again, to an ordinary man. If for some way that happened, he would be out of the running. He would be out of the race. He would no longer be ordinary. He'd no longer be sane. I'm not sure what they'd do to him. Well, that'd be all right. I was just thinking for a second, like I told you, psychiatry. Well, any ordinary person, I'm not picking on psychiatry, but psychiatry would not even be able to deal with him because they couldn't classify it. But, see, as always, life looks after itself. If, in some way, he wouldn't go there himself, but let's say that his family picked him up and decided, we're sick of him sitting around, and he appears to not be thinking about anything most of the time. So he's obviously crazy, and if not, he's driving us crazy. We don't like it. So let's assume he got through work one day, and he did everything he wanted to do, and he came in, he sat down, and he got in that state. He just naturally, and they thought, we've had it. And so they pick him up, put him in the back of the pickup, and they drive him to the nearest psychiatric clinic. And you understand, but see, I was just showing you that even now, for momentarily, I thought, well, wait a minute, I made up one that even I can't get out of because they couldn't classify him as being deranged. But notice, if he stayed in that condition, they took him there, and the admitting death said, well, what's the problem? They said, well, we're not sure, but he is spooky. He gets through work and does all his stuff, and he eats, and he sits down, and he just does nothing. Was he catatonic? No. Was he in some sort of trance? No. What, does he get violent? No. Well, what does he do? You say he gets through every day and he just sits there. Well, I mean, what's the problem? Well, just come look at him. He's spooky. I mean, something's wrong. Nobody does that, do they? The person behind the desk or a psychiatrist, somebody got to go, well, no, I don't. Which, is, I mean, that's all the proof you need. So the point, so the proof is, any of you who didn't lose your place in all this, see, momentarily, I was going to say that that is so deranged that psychiatry could not even handle it because they wouldn't know how to classify him. But see, they wouldn't know because if he stayed in that condition and they tried to talk to him, he couldn't say, or he wouldn't say, yes, my mind is blank and it's driving me crazy. See, because my scenario, he didn't take himself there. He didn't think anything was wrong. So if they took him there, then psychiatry wouldn't have any trouble dealing with him. Assuming he stayed in that condition for a while, they would simply put him down. It's probably some sort of schizophrenia with a catatonia, whatever they call it. Is that baloney?
No.
At any rate, there is such a state as being like that, except it is not natural, it does not happen accidentally, and it's the very thing that would-be mystics, though, are working for, and that in one sense, without it being their aim, it is what everybody is doing every day, constantly, who will do something, will take an outside influence, as it appears to be, some outside force, and turn it on, that they will react to it. Turn the radio and listen to somebody talk, listen to music, read a newspaper, read a billboard. The real one gets to be when there's a more subtle level is right here, is you read a billboard to listen to the radio or look at something and comment on it. Which is not, cannot be at a wider level attributed to you because you are still dealing with what appears to be an outside influence that you're seeking to have change your consciousness. People call this everything but that. I say, well, no, I read to have something to think about. No, there's nothing wrong with people saying I'm entertained, but if you said, no, it's more than entertainment. I understand that movies and TV and all that is entertainment. But if I insisted to a reasonable person that there's more to it than that, you are actually attempting to change your consciousness. When you do that, and if they thought in the right way, they would say, nah, if you're talking about something beyond entertainment, it's not a matter of changing consciousness. It's, I do like to have something to think about. That's why I've just been talking about. Oh, he said. But then people will want to go into specifics because as long as the mind will go into specifics, that is local matters, you do not have to look at the universality of it all. You don't have to look at the truth as long as you're looking at the mystery. You don't have to look at the blunt reality of it as long as you think, well, wait a minute. No, wait a minute. Don't be so quick. What? I mean, this is open to some debate. We can discuss this a bit further. Not only a bit further.
No.
Can you spell infinity? Can you spell the never-ending horizon? People do not want something to think about. At street level, ordinary people, that does pass for a higher sophisticated degree of intellectual food. That is, as we all know, people will say that there is a, they'll be speaking, of course, for themselves, but they will say that there is indeed a very specific difference between the taste, the flavor, the meat of a good philosophical treatise, even an intelligent, insightful commentary on world politics, on social mores, on the arts, that there's a distinct difference. You shouldn't even compare the two between that and just trash TV or yellow journalism. Nah, two different things entirely. Yeah. They are both, in either case, they are both attempts to change one's consciousness. And the person I was just referring to, my figure that says, well, wait a minute, I can agree to some of that, but there's a difference between just turning on TV or going to some cheap movie and maybe going to see a a travel log or a science documentary, that there's a difference. What's the damn difference? If you were so smart you could think, you wouldn't have to have somebody else think for you. So we're running out of time, and I've got to start getting crude, because if I got that crude, the ordinary person, you know, they can dismiss the whole thing. Oh, well, wait, you are crazy. Uh-uh. And then the mind goes, well, wait a minute, I'm not asking somebody to think for me. I read philosophy, for instance. I read philosophy, the guy says. But you think I agree with everything that Plato said, or Hume said, or that Locke said, or that Russell said? No! But what it does is it stimulates me. Don't squeal. See, I thought I'd cover that. Incompetence commonly is delivered amidst great glee and squealing. That's a sister follow-up item to about a week ago, if you remember the one, that incompetence commonly drips. It originally was drools, and I changed it for the sake of propriety. Was incompetence commonly drips with sincerity. Don't believe it? Go to any newscast, financial center, financial broker, temple, church, tent meeting, aluminum siding sales office. Go anywhere where they don't know what they're talking about, which opens up just, I don't have to look for any more examples, surely by now. Go anywhere where people do not know what they're talking about. And most commonly, they will be dripping with sincerity. But get them wound up a little, and it gets beyond just sincerity. Like, oh, you came here at a good time. It'll reach the level of squeals. Oh, God, what a bargain. We have never had prices this low. Boy, Jesus loves you. You wouldn't believe how much he really wants to see you make it. Or whatever. The ordinary mind, what I was going to say, very educated, sophisticated, sane people will take what I've been talking about. And if I say, well, you're not conscious, you're not intelligent, you're paying somebody. Or worse yet, getting it free to get somebody else to think for you. And the guy says, no. I do not agree with everything I read. I read a lot, but a lot of what I read, I don't agree to. I don't agree with everything. My favorite philosopher is Nietzsche. But you think I agree with everything he said? Nah. But even when I read things he didn't say or other philosophers, it inspires me. It spurs me on to think. That is, you know what? No, it's untrue. It is simply not true. And an ordinary man cannot see that. You can't convince him. I wouldn't argue, certainly. But surely by now you can see it. If a man was intelligent in the true sense of intelligence, if you knew intelligence, that you knew how to think in a way that was not simply mechanical commentary placed, burdened upon your own consciousness, you don't need anybody. You don't need anything. Nothing inspires you to think. How are you going to light a fire using wet matches? How are you going to take somebody else's ignorance? I know that logically, sequentially, in the ordinary world, this is not true. And I could defend the other position and prove it. How is it you're going to pick up, I don't care who, and say, well, this inspires me to read such as this? In other words, you believe that person is more awake than you are, more conscious. And this is getting right to the tail end because an ordinary person, we've lost them completely. But I'm asking you, do you think that is true? No. It's not even no or yes, but it is no, because it's irrelevant. What if they are? What's that? The hell's that got to do with you? And for you to say, well, it inspired me. How can something dead inspire something alive? Is what I meant by how can you light a fire here? I don't care who. You reach over to Goethe, Aristotle, Plotinus, and pick it up. It's a wet match. If you're using somebody else to affect your consciousness, you're asleep. You're at the ordinary level, and I don't care how you're dressed. I don't care how fine you talk, because there's nothing else to do. There's nowhere else to look. Everywhere else, no matter how intelligent it seems to be, you are still pressed up against the window, and you're stuck somewhere in the upper Balkans at the least, or at the most. You're still in Yugoslavia, and you may look out there through the fog, and they keep rocking the train. Somebody's wiggling, and you think we're getting somewhere. And you look out, and every now and then, it says things like, University of Prague. And you think, well, I'm getting to a more intelligent area. Yeah. Tonight, didn't you notice when the train, it said, was approaching the Swiss border, that conductor that had the non-schedule look in his eye came around. The illusion that you're actually somewhere. Talk is the mother, though. That's where I was going to get to. But that was last time. Or maybe it'll be next time. All of this can be wrapped up. The mother is it. Talk is the mother of all the attempts. Fade to white.
That concludes this talk. Be sure to visit us at jancox.com, where you can search through 3,000 talks for topics of interest, or just leave us a message.